Good morning. The screen's working now, by the way, so we're good. Okay. I was going to have Allison advance my screen because I couldn't see, but then I figured it out. So we're good. We're good to go. All right. It's good to see everybody here this morning. Then again, it's always good to be here. It's always good to be with family and to spend time with you. And it's good to have any visitors. I don't know if I mentioned that earlier, but you know, sometimes during the welcome, I forget what I'm supposed to be saying. That's why I have notes for my sermon. Otherwise, it would just last forever. But we're very grateful for everybody's presence this morning. Rest. You ever thought about that word? Rest. You know, it's just sounds good, doesn't it? I mean, it's just one of those words that you like to think about and say, but it just, that the whole concept of rest doesn't really seem obtainable, does it? I don't know if it's that way in your life, but it's always been that way in my life, that even when there's times of just being slow and kind of pausing for a while, that there's not really any rest going on, you know, not rest where I'm not, you know, sleeping. I mean, obviously I'm resting when I'm sleeping, but, you know, just during the day when you're just meditating and just sitting there, and it's hard to clear your mind. It's hard to be at rest. It's hard to have a sense of peace, to have a sense of completion, a sense of totality. I mean, have you ever been on vacation, you know, and then you're thinking to yourself, man, I can't wait to get back to work because then I can get some rest, you know, that sometimes just being away from the normal, everyday, mundane, day in, day out is stressful. And even when you're away from work, you feel like, man, it would be so nice to get back into the routine so I can have a sense of rest, you know, just a sense of peace, knowing what the next moment is going to bring, or whatever it is that brings you peace in that situation. But I know I have experienced that. And it seems to me that when things are just interrupted, when things are not in their norm, that is when I find myself not being able to kind of settle down, to settle in. That those are the moments when I find myself most anxious and not able to feel a sense of rest, when things are just unusual and out of sorts and things like that. So I don't know if that's true with you, but that's been true with me in my life. And several years ago, I used to listen to a lot of Zig Ziglar. I know I'm bringing up a lot of oldies, you know, Jerry Clower and Zig Ziglar and all those guys, but I love listening to all of those. And if you've ever listened to any of his talks, you know, he has, they always called him the salesman's salesman, you know, and he would give these talks about business and sales from a really biblical perspective. But he talked about productivity and busyness. It's always stuck with me over the years, because one of the things he said about productivity is that when you're really productive, you have a really productive day and it's planned out and it's organized and you accomplish what you set out to accomplish. So you set a goal and you accomplish it. You know, it's a lot of work. And it's a lot of physical work and it's a lot of mental work. But when you're done at the end of the day, you're so satisfied. You know, you've got so much energy because you've completed the task, and you go home and you're excited and you load up the family and you go to McDonald's, you know, and you're thinking, yes, you know, because there's energy and excitement and completion in that work, right? But then when you have a day that's just kind of lazy and nothing goes your way, and you know, it's not as productive, it's not as well planned, when you get off, you're just lethargic and sluggish, and you're thinking, oh, I don't want to do anything, you know? But the fact that you worked more on the productive day didn't make you more tired, right? It made you encouraged, you know? You're encouraged and you're productive and you're excited. But during the lazy day, the day that just wasn't productive, you know, you're just down. You just don't have the energy, right? It doesn't make a lot of sense when you're thinking about physical labor, but really that tends to be the way things are. And that's always stuck with me, this idea that sometimes rest is not necessarily just going home and taking a break, that sometimes you find rest, just this sense of peace, this sense of being settled in when you're productive. Right? When the labor is good, when you're doing things that are good, when you're being productive, you find rest for your body, you find rest for your person. And so I would like us to think about these ideas of rest and kind of talk about it from this perspective. Rest comes when we can settle into productivity. All right? Rest comes when we can settle into productivity, and rest is satisfying when it's coupled with completion. All right. And I always think about this verse when I think about work, you know, and productivity from Proverbs chapter 6, about the proverb of the ant. When God is in the wisdom literature, God is encouraging his people to look at the ant and its productivity. And it says, "Go to the ant, you sluggard, consider its ways and be wise." And then it says in verse 7, "It has no commander, no overseer or ruler. Yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest. How long will you lie there, you sluggard? When will you get up from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come on you like a thief, and scarcity like an armed man." So, I mean, wisdom from the ant. I mean, who would have thought, right? You know, wisdom from the ant, this whole idea that here's this little ant and he doesn't really seem to have much of a purpose except for just gathering food and you know, being a nuisance to us. But in God's creation, we look at it working and it doesn't have a ruler, doesn't have a commander. Nobody's going around ordering it to do this and that. But yet it does. It works. It's productive. It stores up its food in the given time so that it could have for the future, right? Even though God provides for his creation, even though God provides for his creation knows how to provide for itself by collecting what God has given, right? Using its faculties, using its ability to prepare for the future. And God says, look at this ant, and then compare that to you. You know, I mean, what are you doing? Who are you? What kind of rest are you seeking? Right? And if you think about the ant coming into a rest when it's completed with its work, it's gathered all of its food and it's ready for winter or ready for the season of not harvesting, that ant can, if ants rest, I don't know if they actually rest or not, but I mean, the idea is that it can be complete. It has succeeded. It has been successful in its productivity. Whereas here is a person, a human, right, that is lazy. All they want to do is sleep. They just want to fold their hands and they want to come into rest. But the Bible says that's laziness, you know. That's not the same thing. It's not the same thing. And we might think, well, you know, I mean, a lot of work, you know, how can you ever rest if you have so much work to do? You know, well, God says, well, actually, you know, when you're not doing anything, when you're being lazy, when you're just serving yourself and enjoying your sleep, that's not rest. That's laziness, right? Because you're not resting. You're not coming into your productivity. You're not resting into completion. You're just being lazy. And so the Bible makes a distinction between what it means to truly rest in relationship to our work. And so we've been talking about Genesis chapters 1, 2, and 3 and spending some time there, building our sermon series from those contexts. And so I would like to go to Genesis chapter 2, if you will, verses 1 and 3. And let's talk about God and his creation. So we know from the narrative story that God has created all of these things, the heavens and the earth and land and sea. And then he has filled these things. He has taken that which is void, and he has filled these things with inhabitants in the land. And on the sixth day, as we see God creating and bringing humanity and life into existence. And then chapter 2 is kind of a going back and going through some of those periods and elaborating on some of those things. So in chapter 2, in verse 1, it says, "Thus the heaven and the earth were completed in all their vast array," right? Just completed, completion, brought to a completion. And then verse 2, it says, "By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested." He rested from all of his work. And then God blessed the seventh day and he made it holy, because on it he rested from all of the work of creating that he had done, right? And the word here is very significant in to the Hebrew people and their culture, but it's a word, Shabbat. And we might not be familiar with that particular word, Shabbat, but we are familiar with the word Sabbath, and they're related words. And when we talk about Sabbath, we're referring to a period of time of either 7 days or 7 months or 7 years that God has set aside that involves rest. It's related to this word Shabbat, but Sabbath involves the number 7, and it relates to this period of creation as God has created all of these things. And on the seventh day, he comes into rest. And so that's where our context starts when we talk about rest from the very beginning. We recognize that God, in his productivity, in his completion, settles in. He comes into his rest, right? It's a beautiful imagery of how God has established and created and brought these things about. And for Israel, God even commanded his covenant people Israel to settle into a rest, which they called a Sabbath. So let's take a look at that. It's significant for us to understand how God created these things, but also how God has commanded his people, humanity, to function within this framework of rest and Sabbath and Shabbat. So Exodus chapter 31 in verse 12, it says, "And then the Lord said to Moses, say to the Israelites, you must observe my Sabbaths." Okay, "This will be a sign between me and you for generations to come, so that you may know that I am Lord who makes you holy." So God expected his covenant people to observe his Sabbaths, these days and months and years that God has set aside for them to observe, all related to the number 7, right? And that these Sabbath times of rest, these times of completion, I mean, that's really what we're talking about. It's like working for 6 days, and then you've got a time of settling into your completion. You know, working up to a point where you're preparing yourself, you're setting aside whatever you need to set aside, you're doing business, you're taking care of loose ends, you're making preparation. And on that day, God expected his people to come into their rest, to come into a state of completion, right? To stop, to quite literally stop. And then we had 7 months and then 7 years, different periods of time that God established for his people to settle into their rest. But he says this would be a sign, right? This time of just stopping and settling into your productivity and your completion is a sign of the covenant that I made with you, that you need to remember and meditate on and think about this covenant relationship, that the Sabbath was not just a day to hang out, you know, and drink some lemonade and go put up a hammock and just kind of do that kind of thing. I mean, that's not what we think about often when we think about rest, but that's not what God is thinking about when he's asking them to come into their Shabbat. But he is thinking about them coming into completion, the end of the week. Right? It has come to an end. Your productivity has come to an end. But what does that say about the rest of the week? Right? It assumes that they have been laboring. It assumes that they have been working up to this point. It assumes that they haven't been sitting around drinking lemonade and sitting in a hammock, that there has been work that they have been purposed to do and they purposed to do, and they're doing it. And God assumes that this time is going to be a time when they can settle into that completion. And that's what they were expected to do. That's what God expected of his covenant people. But not just remembering the covenant, but also remembering who is Lord, right? Who is Lord? That when they came into their Sabbath, when the Israelites would Shabbat on the seventh day, that they were supposed to remember who is Lord. And oh, how we forget that, right? I mean, we don't have that built into the new covenant where we have a Sabbath like they did, but we understand that it is incredibly easy to go about your day and to work and to labor and to strive and to do and to do and to keep doing until you forget about who is Lord, who is actually in control, who is actually your Lord. Because it doesn't take long of a person laboring and making money and paying bills and doing it all over again to start to think that it's all about you, right? That's easy to do. It's easy to think and feel like it all rests on your shoulders. It's all about you, that you're in control and you're in charge. And if you don't do this or that, that it's all going to come tumbling down, that you have to do everything. And God built into his covenant people Israel a day in which they stopped and realized, it's not all about me. It's not all about me. It's all about God, right? And that's something we miss, isn't it? That's something that we probably don't do as often as we should, but it is something that God built into his covenant family of Israel and something that we need to think about as well. We also need to be mindful, as they were, of who it was that made them holy. Who is Lord, right? That's important, but who made you holy? Who made you who you are? Who brought you into that covenant relationship? Who made you a family? It was God, right? Who made you holy? Who is Lord? These are things that they were to meditate on this day of rest. So it wasn't just a reminder of their generation, of this first generation of Israelites, but God says, no, as generation and generation passes and as each generation practices and continues observing my Sabbaths, they're going to remember who is Lord. They're going to remember who made them holy. In verse 14, he says, observe the Sabbath because it is holy to you. It's holy to God, right? He made it holy, but it's holy to you. Anyone who desecrates it is to be put to death, right? I don't know. I just think about that idea of taking something which is pure and good and set aside and holy, and how often we desecrate that, right? And we tend to do that. We have a tendency to corrupt that which God has purposed for good, you know, in all areas of our life. But God wanted them to observe and keep this day holy and not to desecrate it. And then he says, or you will be put to death, And those who do any work on this day must be cut off from their people, right? And I don't know if I've ever been threatened with death to take a day off, you know? I mean, that's not something I've ever had to deal with. But I mean, and so it comes across and striking to me. It makes me pause and question and wonder. And it makes me realize that this is more than just a day off, right? It's not what it was meant for. It was not meant for that. There's more here, this day that God set aside for his people that we may miss if we're not careful, but we also may miss it in our own lives as well, that God set this aside. But anyone who does any work, anybody who continues to labor, anybody who doesn't settle into their productivity, anybody who doesn't come to a completion of their work, God considers that those people who do not Shabbat on the Sabbath are people who are not remembering who is Lord. These are people who are not remembering who made them holy. These are people who are not acting like holy people by not treating God's special time as holy. They're desecrating this holy time. Verse 15, he says, "For 6 days work is to be done, but the seventh day is a day of Sabbath rest, Sabbath Shabbat," that this is the day of rest, holy to the Lord, and whoever does any work on the Sabbath day is to be put to death. Verse 16, the Israelites are to observe the Sabbath, celebrating it for the generations to come as an everlasting covenant. So for 6 days, Israelites had their time. I mean, this is it. God is saying, this is your time to work. This is your time to be productive. This is your time to do what you need to do, to work the animals, to work the help, you know, because they were non-Israelites that obviously were part of this relationship that they had that worked for the covenant people of God. And so they had to allow all to rest, to come into a completion, right? Not to continue in their labor, but to be ready and prepared to come into a day when they can cease, right? Just stop from your labor, you know? And that could be so hard, can it? I mean, I know that trying to think about vacation time and taking time off, there's just so much work that needs to be done just leading up to that time when you can say, okay, I could take some time off. I can walk away from this for a while, right? And there's so much preparation that goes into that. Just being able to make sure that everything's going to move smoothly and continue as it should. And it's stressful. Right? I mean, that week before vacation can be stressful because you're thinking, do I have enough prepared? I mean, am I going to be ready when we come back? I mean, can I leave? You know, am I leaving anything undone? Am I forgetting something? It happens. But God is looking at his people and he's saying, no, you have this period of time to labor and to prepare and to get ready and to do the things you need to do. But on this day, you will stop. You will stop. It's not an option, right? You will stop and you will remember who is Lord and you will remember who made you holy. You will come into my Sabbath and you will Shabbat because that is what I did, right? In creation. I came into creation and I expect you to cease from your labor. Look at verse 17. He says, "It will be a sign between me and the Israelites forever. For 6 days, the Lord made the heavens and the earth." So he's connecting it to what he did in creation. "And on the seventh day, he rested and was refreshed." A little added word there, refreshed. Now, this word comes from a word that derives from nephesh, okay, which means soul. It comes up quite frequently in the Old Testament to mean soul or life. And this word that is translated refresh is a word that simply means to breathe out, to breathe out, because we don't think about God as a God that really needs to take a break, right? I mean, we don't think about God, the eternal God, the all-powerful creator God, as one who needs to go chill for a little bit so he can rest his legs or something. You know, that God just doesn't seem to have that. He doesn't sleep, doesn't really rest in the sense that he's going to get tired or weary. But the text said that he was refreshed, right? What does that mean? Well, it means that he was satisfied. It was good. His creation was good. And when God stopped and ceased from creation and he rested, it means that he stopped and he was satisfied. He was refreshed with what he has accomplished and what has been done. And that's what is implied, that he breathed out, right? It's like you have a really big project and you're really working hard on it, and it's a long project and long hours, day and night, you know, for 6 days you're laboring on this project. It comes to a completion and fullness, and you sit back and you look at it and you say, that's good. That's good. And you meditate on it and you think about the project, and you know that it stays with you, right? I mean, all day you're thinking about, yeah, that was good. That was a good project. And you settle into your productivity. You settle into your work, and it's rest. It's refreshing and it's good. And that's what God did when he came and rested on the seventh day. Now, one thing we have to be mindful of is that even though God ceased from his work and he rested and was refreshed, this doesn't imply that God was completely done with his creation. Now, he was done creating, right? And things would begin to produce fruit and, you know, animals and more animals and more people and things like that. And so, you know, that's how God is going to allow things to continue. But he didn't just sit back and say, okay, we'll see how this thing pans out. But we recognize God through the scriptures as a God who continues to be active in some way in his creation. So it's not that he just completely gave up on creation and went back to heaven and said, all right, let's see what happens. But that he would continue to work, especially through humanity. Especially through humanity. That God would continue to work in his creation, not on, but in his creation, through humanity. And Genesis chapter 2 and verse 15 talks about God's work through us. And he says in verse 15, when the Lord God took the man, okay, so he created man from the dust, you know, and we get the implication that there is a place outside the garden that he's going to create. And then, because he always puts man in the garden, which is really significant in my thinking, because growing up, I've always seen the little cartoons and stuff and drawings where, you know, Adam is taken from the garden, he's built, you know, but the Bible gives the impression that Adam was created of the earth and put in the garden. And I think that is a very significant part of the narrative that we need to pay attention to, the wording of that, that when God took the man and he put him into the Garden of Eden, to do what? To cultivate and to keep it, right? That was man's purpose. You come into the garden, my garden, the one in which I created, right? My creation, my image bearer, and you cultivate and you keep that which I have created. It was God's purpose, his will for us to work. Right? God didn't create this perfect environment so that he can create Adam and Eve and say, okay, guys, you know, chill and do nothing. You know, be lazy. Go hang out. Go find a tree to sit under. You know, eat the fruit. No, he didn't create Adam and Eve for that purpose, but he created them to cultivate and to keep that which he has created. That was humanity's purpose for being and working in the garden, that they had work, right? And of course, outside the garden after the fall, that work became increasingly more difficult, okay? In fact, it was going to kill them. They were going to work until they turned back to dust, right? So it became increasingly more difficult, but God did not say work was evil. He didn't say work wasn't good. He didn't say that being productive was bad. He didn't say that going and doing and being and providing and taking care of and all these things that that we might think, well, those things are just not holy. You know, I mean, work's not holy, you know. Monday through Friday, that's not holy. That's not God's purpose. No, God never said that. But even in the beginning, he put Adam and Eve in a place where they would work, where they would cultivate and keep. And with God's covenant people, he put them in a position where they would work, be productive, go and do, be the people of God. He has given them a work to do. It's not that work is evil. Sorry. I'm sorry for those who would like to think that, you know, but it's not. What's evil in God's sight is not being productive, not doing, not being, not cultivating, not keeping, right? Being lazy, desiring to sleep all the time and not doing the work. That's not what God has purposed for humanity in his good creation, right? And under the new covenant, right, we're not commanded to keep the Sabbath day. I want to be clear with that we don't have a Sabbath. Sometimes people call Sunday the Christian Sabbath. The Bible never calls it that, you know, and I don't recall ever putting anyone to death not showing up to church, but, you know, maybe it's happened. But we just don't have that. That's not part of the new covenant, that we have this particular day that is commanded of us, a Sabbath day. We are commanded to assemble on the first day of the week, but it's not the same, not the same thing. But the lesson and the principles remain. And there is a deep-rooted theological lesson, a big word, eschatological lesson. I can't even say it, right? But this lesson that God is planning and purposing and bringing everything to a completion, and we're going to spend the rest of this month talking about that and thinking about what it means for Christians and how it functions with us and what we look forward to. But for now, for this lesson, this is what I want us to think about. I just want us to spend some time thinking about these ideas, that rest only comes when we settle into productivity, that rest is satisfying when it's coupled with completion, right? That's how we're supposed to think about this concept of Shabbat, right? And in our rest, we are to remember certain things. We are to remember who is Lord and who made us holy. Those are some of the things I want us to think about and meditate on as we go about our daily grind, right? Our daily work, and we do the things that we're called to do. And I think it's easy. I think it's easy to forget who is in control. We're in the middle of just being so incredibly busy. And all too often, we start to think it's all about me, right? We think it's all about me, that we become dependent on ourselves as if it depends on us, and it's all about us. That sometimes is where our labor ends. That instead of coming into a completion and a satisfaction of rest, we come into a sense of self-dependence, and that's never what God wanted for us, right? We forgot that work, cultivating and keeping is part of who we are. It's part of being God's image bearers. It's how God created us. You know, I'm often reminded of James chapter 4, when I think about labor and work, and when he uses wisdom to talk about the people and how they were functioning. In verse 13 of chapter James says, "Come now, you who say today or tomorrow we go to such and such city and we spend a year there and we gauge in business and we make a profit." Then in verse 14, "Yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You're just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes." And then in verse 15, he said, "Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and also do this or that. But as it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Therefore, to the one who knows the right thing to do and does not do it, to him it is sin." You are just a vapor. All right, so James would never be a good motivational speaker, right? I mean, you're just a vapor, you know? But how humbling is that? How humbling is to think about in light of the eternal God who created us, that our life here on earth is a vapor. It's so incredibly short. So incredibly short. And just when we start to think that it's all about us, right? All about me, right? James tells us and reminds us that our life compared to God and his life is short. And it's all about him. It's all about doing his will. It's all about serving him, right? And he doesn't say, don't work, you know? I mean, I guess we insert that in there, but he doesn't say, don't be busy. He doesn't say, don't go and do. But he says, when you go and do, when you work, when you're busy, you need to make sure that you're remembering the Lord. You need to make sure you're remembering who made you holy. You need to make sure that you're doing the will of the Lord. So how are we fulfilling this obligation to work? How are you fulfilling this obligation to work? Right? Whatever your work is, you know, I mean, you may be a stage in your life where simply caring for family members, that's your work. Right? You may be married, you may be single. You know, you may be in a position where that just waking up in the morning and taking care of you can be work, right? You who knows what your situation is? I think we all are sitting in different situations. You may be a parent and you've got work to do outside the home, but you have work to do inside the home. All of that is busy and it's hectic and it can be crazy, but it's good. It's good. It's good. That just needs to be said, that your work, your productivity, your work in the home, your work outside the home, your whatever it is that you're doing, it's good. And it's what you're supposed to be doing. But in your work, if you become too self-reliant, if you become too focused on you and you forget about the Lord, then your work, your labor is not going to end in rest. It's not going to end in satisfaction. It's not going to end in completion. It's going to end in you losing your soul and the soul of those in whom you love because you've worked yourself to death. Right? So what we need to learn from this lesson and what we need to practice from God's wisdom is that God rested and was refreshed. And his people are told to rest and be refreshed, to remember the Lord, to remember who is in control, and to remember who made you holy. This morning, if there's anybody here who has struggled with that, and you just feel the weightiness of the world on your shoulders as if it's all about you, this is a time for you. If you desire to come forward, let us pray for you, let us encourage you, and let us help you come to a fulfillment and completion of that and come into God's rest. If you're not part of God's family and you desire to be part of God's family, that opportunity is available for you this morning. If you would come forward as we stand and as we sing.